you've made a very good point that when you look at the PMF, you're right. The type of community mobilization activities are listed in each country. And then the percentage of women and men who are trained, who actually do it, are recorded over time. So as the numbers go up, that shows they've actually done the leadership through community mobilization that demonstrates their leadership.
Thank you.
Very good point, Yvonne. So if you look at the performance measurement framework, they're all listed there. So I would say that that's probably a good measure.
We'll give that to them. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's now again, you could argue that there's another group of women and men somewhere else in the country who don't get any training on leadership who are also mobilizing and promoting advancing gender equality and human rights. But this is fairly good start, and they show the percentages. So that's interesting, yes. So we could argue that in this case, that that outcome indicator is fairly good at measuring increased leadership because they actually track how many communities they've mobilized in these different ways. So I sit corrected. It's not just attendance. And it's not, and they actually are measuring leadership skill in the PMF by listing these ways that they can mobilize communities, which is an indication this is how they've done and demonstrated their leadership. So that's a good point. So we'll say that for this indicator, out of the 20 outcome indicators,
absolutely,
it's
and
okay.
Also pointing to other factors beyond the training that improves the capacity of men and women to actually take up leadership roles in carrying out community mobilization. I remember when sometime during the COVID-19 pandemic or before it, there was something that was happening in the United States. It was a Me Too movement against gender-based violence, sexual and gender-based violence. And it was so huge that it had impact in suburban communities in West Africa. So we had men and women who were not even in the United States, who were miles away, just for the benefit of media, they had increased capacity. They were going into schools, they were going into town halls, talking to people about gender equality and gender-based violence. They did not need to get trained for it, but something happening somewhere else in the world just, you know, sparked off this passion and, you know, this need to actually spread the message across. So I feel it's brilliant that they are training, but it's also important to note that there are other things that are happening and other factors that would also improve people's capacity to lead these initiatives.
Right. And that's a medium that they, and I'm wondering if in this project they actually introduced that as part of the training, how to use social media as a mechanism to promote gender equality. Be interesting to see if that was actually in there, because they do have engagement, awareness raising campaigns. They may have used social media as a way
exactly.
to do that.
And storytelling, storytelling spreads the message across the world. If you tell your stories well, people would pick lessons from it, and the impact could be far greater for Equitas.
Exactly. And again, the techniques or how to influence the duty bearers, especially as we're going to talk about in this last outcome, we're going to have a bit of fun with this one because we're going beyond evaluation, which is the focus of the podcast. We're going to get into a little bit of international development policy just for fun. And that gets back to your point that in the end, you have to have these social media as a platform to influence, but the people in power I have to be changed. And so in this last outcome, increased empowerment of women and girls for the advancement of gender equality in their communities, there are two indicators, and we're both going to look at them. I'm going to start with the first one, number of women and girls mobilized for the advancement of gender equality in their communities. And again, there need to be comparison groups to show that in areas where the project is not active, that those women felt empowered, mobilized. Also, did the project actually increase mobilization at greater rates than where the project was not involved? Now, they could come back and say, wait a sec, David, we're doing this at the country level. The whole country got our $18 million exposure. I don't know if there are even, but they do say target, don't they use the magic word, targeted, you know, they say target countries. So maybe they're claiming for $18 million, they've been able to blanket the entire country, all five of these countries, with this all these initiatives and trainings, so that they could say, well, sorry, David, we can't have a comparison group because the whole country got it. It's not clear. So that's one point. The other thing is, again, forget about the women and the girls. They were mobilized, but you want to go one step further. Did the duty bearers bring in any legislation that reflected this greater empowerment? So, for example, duty bearers have reported that these women human rights organizations have improved their ability to influence them on advancing gender equality. So once again, you have to ask the duty bearers if they made any significant progress, even if they felt they were more empowered or more mobilized. So that's important. And what I'm going to introduce right here is the fact that the five countries they looked at, Burkina Faso, Haiti, Kenya, Senegal, and Tanzania, according to the Democracy Index in 2023, none of them are democracies. But if you look at the 2023 Freedom House, three of them, Kenya, Senegal, Tanzania, they say are partly free. So it raises the issue of maybe they've picked the wrong five countries where they're not even democracies to begin with. And why don't we get into countries in Africa that are democracies and have made the turn, where maybe they need help in getting to the next level, which is consolidating that democracy by advancing gender equality and human rights. Because if you don't, the country could regress. And there are five countries that are democracies: Botswana, Ghana, Lesotho, Namibia, South Africa. But that's a policy issue. But I just thought I'd bring it up. So I'll stop there and let you talk about the second. The outcome, again, is increased empowerment of women and girls for the advancement of gender equality in their communities. And you're looking at the other outcome indicator for that outcome.
Yes, we're focusing on this one, which is the level of confidence on a 4-point scale of women and girls to advance gender equality in their communities. So first I'd say they trained men and women, but they're only checking for level of confidence of women and girls. And as much as we've checked about the democracy index for these countries, did we check their, what's the word for it? The gender perception, it's part of the cultural traits of this country. Some countries are more patriarchal in terms of the way they perceive things and the way they do things. Men lead actions.
Yes, that's why, as the joke goes, dictator is two words.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely patriarchal.
Yeah, because some of these countries are patriarchal. Yeah. It doesn't matter how confident girls and women are about advancing gender equality. If they're not allowed to have a voice, if they're not allowed to sit at tables, if they would be persecuted for standing up in protests, then I'm not sure we're going to see verifiable or not verifiable, what we're going to see far stretched impact of the trainings. But going beyond that, we need comparison groups. And this is, you mentioned something about them saying they used $18 million as a blanket cover for the whole, that they implemented the project in the whole country. But we have to remember that in implementing projects, you're dealing with people, especially if you're people-centered, and people have rights and choices. So if you present an opportunity for training on gender equality to a group of 20 people, it's not all 20 people that are going to say yes, that they want to participate or to be a beneficiary of your project. For some not so specific reasons, some people might say, no, I'm sorry, I would not be able to participate in your training. As much as I love women and girls and gender equality, I'm not going to be part of it. And so even within that same country, within Tanzania, you'd have people that say no, who just decided that they don't want to be part of your training, part of the project. And so they can make up part of the comparison group. That's what I believe. And then if the confidence level rises, is that enough to be said that these women and girls have been empowered? Because my confidence level could have improved, but I might have a parent, maybe my father, if I was in one of these communities, my father could say, oh, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to let you go to this meeting. And there's nothing I can do about it, because that's the cultural structure that I live in. I can't just willfully stand up and do whatever I want to do. So there's still contextual and cultural factors that also determine the level of impact these confidence levels can create in their communities. And we talked about the Democracy Index, Burkina Faso, Haiti, Kenya, Senegal, Tanzania. And then we could talk about replacing them. And
this is why we're getting at, we're sort of having fun here. We're not focusing on evaluation anymore. Now it's just a question of, should they have even decided, the government of Canada, to fund this project in those five countries for the reasons you've pointed out, that it's not a good focus. They should have focused on countries that actually have already become democratic but need help in consolidating that democracy by getting gender equality with the people in power that are responsible for it aware of what needs to be done to consolidate it, so there's no regression. They've already are prepared to go in that direction.
True. And many, especially, for example, while I was doing my dissertation at the University of East Anglia, I had the opportunity of visiting the World Bank database to collect data for my project. And there's actually something called the Gender Inequality Index for all countries in the world.
That's right, UNDP.
Yes. And the UNDP also publishes results for that. So that, I would like to know if Equitas incorporated that information before coming up with these indicators and then choosing how they measured it. Do you get? Yeah, that's what I would like to know.
Oh, yes.
I'd like to know. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So we're going to look at, again, the outcome, increased commitment of select women's organizations to engage duty bearers in dialogue on advancing gender equality in target countries. And you're looking at this indicator 1320B.
Yes, and this is which the indicator here is the level of commitment of select women's organizations on a 4-point scale to engage duty bearers in dialogue on advancing gender equality. This is still going to be about self-reporting bias. If I was a leader of a women's organization and I have participated in some form of training or workshop under this project, I would say yes, my level of commitment has improved. But there is no certainty that this would actively translate into my engagement with duty bearers. Also, we would need to ask the duty bearers instead of these women organizations, if the women's organizations were actually good at engaging with them on advancing gender equality. So going beyond, you know, checking for whether women's organizations are committed or not, we need to ask the duty bearers, these women's organizations, you've met with them, you've had meetings with them, were they good? Did you feel your meeting was effective? Do you feel like you're more capable or equipped to advance gender equality in your own way? And then we have another output, 1311, which trains them on how to engage the duty bearers. I feel, David, you could talk more about that.
Right. The other, and we've already addressed this in other indicators, but the next outcome is increased capacity of select women's organizations to engage duty bearers in better fulfilling their human rights obligations to advance gender equality in target countries. And again, the outcome indicator is level of perceived capacity of select women's organizations to engage duty bearers in fulfilling their human rights obligations to advance gender equality. And like before, perceived capacity of those they train is not a valid measure of technical capacity to engage. So that's straightforward there. The next one is increased opportunities for civil society organizations to collaborate on advancing gender equality in target countries. And we're looking at that outcome indicator for that outcome.
Yeah, and that's the number of opportunities available for civil society organizations to collaborate on advancing gender equality in target countries. And this is flawed in that it is only measured once a year with no comparison group. Yep. And increased opportunities could easily happen for reasons outside of the project. They need to find civil society organizations outside of the project who did not receive support from the project to see if those CSOs are also increasing their opportunities to advance gender equality without any support for the project. So this is basically establishing there's a technical word for it, but you understand what I'm saying, David. Thank you. Yes.
Right. The next outcome is increased capacity of women's and human rights organizations to carry out human rights education to advance gender equality. And the outcome indicator is percent of human rights educators, women, men, and others, trained on human rights education to advance gender equality, transferring knowledge to women's and human rights organizations. And as we mentioned previously, it's the same issue. We're not interested in the transfer, as the outcome says. We want to know if their capacity to carry out that education has increased. So they shouldn't be asking the percentages transfer the knowledge, but do they actually have the ability to educate others? So forget the transfer. Measure the percent of educators who passed the training. And they should also measure the technical capacity to educate of the women in human rights organizations, since that is the outcome. So we're seeing quite a bit of a pattern here. Now, the next one is, again, increased opportunities for women and or girls to participate in decision-making process within local structures in target countries. And the other indicator for that?
The indicator for this is the percentage of total women and or girls trained that are participating in decision-making processes within local structures. And this is also going to fall under the self-reporting bias. Don't just ask the women or girls if they participated. Instead, we need to find the percentage of these women or girls who are sitting on legitimate decision-making bodies, and only those who have voting power in these local structures using external criteria. They should not, or they could just be serving tea, taking minutes, or doing other mundane tasks. So we really need to know if they're actually in legitimate decision-making bodies and they have the voting powers.
And I would like to add to that an example, and the country and the dictator will remain nameless, but there is a country in Africa where the dictator has appointed almost all of the members of parliament to be women. So he raises his hands and says, look, UN, I am scoring the best on the gender index. The 100% of the assembly is women, but guess what? The women have no power, but they're there and they show up. But it's kind of like a, what do you call it? I can't remember the term, but it's a rubber stamp parliament. They have no power.
That's not sufficient.
The power is all coming out of the dictator's office. But this is another example where it's brilliant, you know, where he has appointed all these women. And technically, if you follow the GESI score, I think it's called the gender empowerment, he still has it, they would score perfect because women are 100% representing the parliament. But guess what? The parliament has no power.
That's not sufficient.
So I think, No, far from it. And he's actually following the rules of the index, doing very well on the index, but you have to take a closer look. And the last one we've got here is enhanced collaboration among women and human rights organizations to advance human rights in their countries. And I have here the indicator number of collaborative initiatives among women's and human rights organizations to advance human rights in their country, which again is good. It's an indication that as the initiatives increase, collaboration is going to improve, which is good. But again, they need to more clearly define collaborative initiative so that they can claim that those initiatives have indeed increased. And they measure it only at once at baseline and once at the end line. So again, you could argue that these initiatives could go up in the middle of the project with nothing related to what the project activities are, if they're only measuring it once at the beginning and once at the end. Although it's a fairly good indicator, it's just the measurement, again, is not very frequent. And again, we don't know, with no comparison groups, if this could have happened anyways. Collaborative initiatives increasing over time in the country, even without the project. We just don't know. So more frequent measurement, or find me a comparison group, and then they can say the initiatives or the activities in our project were contributed to the increase in the collaboration initiatives over time. And I think there is one more indicator, increased leadership of women and men in community mobilization activities that advance gender equality in target countries. And I think we had talked about this, you had noticed that now we have a better idea that the type of community mobilization activities is connected to the other indicator, the percent of total women and men that actually go about doing it, right?
Yes.
Right. So that's covered. And that is where we thought Both A and B combined, those indicators, percent of total women and men trained, demonstrating leadership, is supported by the second indicator, which is the type of community mobilization activities demonstrating leadership that they actually did. So we believe that's a good indicator. Yes. So that concludes our review of the outcome indicators. And I would still conclude that the outcome indicators do not adequately measure the achievement of the outcomes, and that Equitas cannot conclude that they have achieved their outcomes in this project. What do you think?
I agree with you. However, I would absolutely love to hear more from them if the opportunity avails itself. Thank you.
Exactly. Right. So thank you, Yvonne, for your input. Greatly appreciated. We will, what we'll do now is take this part two and send it to the Minister for International Development, as well as the shadow critics from the Conservative Party, the New Democratic Party, the Bloc Québécois, critics of international development, the shadow critics, because we believe, regardless of your political affiliation, it's important that the $4 to $5 billion that taxpayers in Canada spend on these services in developing countries needs to be properly evaluated. And we believe, or at least I believe, that that is not happening and it needs to happen. So we'll do that and build the evidence that shows that they need to improve on proper evaluation, and we'll take it from there. Okay, thank you, Yvonne, and stay tuned for episode 8 in about a couple of weeks. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Yvonne. Bye for now. And it's so weird. Are you still there? Or you're gone? Okay.